Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. College and heavy drinking, they go hand in hand for many and represent the last landing before the responsibilities of adulthood take over. This American Life host Ira Glass talked to a college senior who considers binge drinking a normal rite of passage.
I mean, you can always do that stuff now when you're in college, you know. You can't do it. I wouldn't be able to do it 6 months from now. You know, it's college.
It's college. But what are the consequences physically and mentally? Joining us today, Thomas Vanderven. He is an associate professor in sociology and anthropology at Ohio University and the author of a new book, Getting Wasted, Why College Students Drink Too Much and Party So Hard. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks, Ann.
When your book went to press, Ohio University was ranked just number two party school in the nation. The 2011 Princeton Review Survey has identified OU as the nation's number one party school now, pushing the University of Georgia down a slot this time. How much did OU's reputation as a party school inspire your work there?
I would say not at all. When I started this research 7 years ago, or almost 8 years ago now, most of my research has been in criminology. I've studied juvenile delinquency, family life and delinquency, and I was just looking for a project where I could do qualitative research. I like to do interviews, field work, just up close and really understand an issue from the inside. And so for me, the college drinking scene was right in front of me and provided all kinds of opportunities for research. So OU's reputation had nothing to do with that.
Do you believe that OU's ranking is deserved, or what do you think of that, Princeton?
I don't think much of that party school list. I think if you ask other people, and there've been a lot of critiques of this over the years. A lot of times those party school rankings are based on the surveying of less than 1% of the student population at a given school. And they're not representative samples either. So, you know what? Is there some partying going on at OU? Certainly. And there is at Ohio State. And there's a lot of partying going on at colleges across the nation. I think it's unfair for OU to have that identity. We have a lot of other things, good things going on for us here.
And is it constructive, I guess, is another question.
Oh, that's a good question, because some schools like University of Colorado and Rhode Island, after they were on the list, they made, I think, they sort of accelerated and amplified their efforts to do something about high-risk drinking at their schools. That's true here at Ohio University. We have a lot of people working together to reduce risky drinking and to implement different kinds of programs and strategies to make it a safer place to drink and to go to school, period. So I think it's constructive in that way if it raises attention, to the issues.
You said that when you were a student at Indiana University in the 1980s, heavy drinking was a given. But I was wondering what you really meant by that. Was it? Did parents really know what was going on, do you think, the extent to which by then the drinking had kind of taken over?
Yeah. My comment there was when I went there, I don't remember this attention, this media attention,
yes.
the public as a public health issue. Researchers since then have called it college drinking, binge drinking, the largest public health issue that faces college students. But so no, I don't remember any of that. Did parents know? Well, if they went to college, they did. I don't think that there's great evidence that binge drinking or heavy drinking college has increased all that much. Over recent decades, it's stayed pretty constant since 1993. And before then, we just don't have the same data on it. So, maybe in the 50s and 60s and 70s, they were hitting it just as hard, but we just don't have the data.
My guest is Thomas Vanderven. He's an associate professor in sociology and anthropology at Ohio University. He's also the author of a new book. It's called Getting Wasted, Why College Students Drink Too Much and Party So Hard. If you have a theory about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, or you can tweet me at Ann Fisher, WOSU. You wrote that you took a different tack than other researchers. Everyone agreed that binge drinking was a problem, but instead of focusing on individual interviews, although you did many of those, you attempted to understand the social process of alcohol use on campus. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Pat, you know, and there is a very large body of research literature on college drinking, most of it produced by survey researchers. The College Alcohol Survey, great study. Most of what we know about the distribution of heavy drinking, we've learned from that study. However, college drinking is a social thing. And before I did my work, I don't think any researchers really tried to capture it as a social process. So one thing I did is I surveyed students, gave them open-ended qualitative surveys, and asked them to describe for me the last time they drank to intoxication. Tell me why you decided to drink, who you were with, how much you drank, what you did something go, what went wrong, if something went wrong, and then what did you do to repair the situation, how did it feel the next morning. What I got was a narrative of a drinking episode and everything that happened and all the actors that were involved in it. So where the survey, you just say, how much do you drink and what's your GPA and all that, you're just getting individual. So I'm getting a story that involves the whole cast of characters. Same with my interviews. I asked all kinds of questions. Interesting about my interviews is I could interview somebody and they tell me their drinking story, and then they might send me their roommate or friend, and I would get the same drinking story from a different perspective. Sort of a check on the data in that way. I also did field work in bars, at street festivals, house parties. So I saw heavy drinking or college drinking as a social process up close and from the inside.
Just for the record, did the research, it didn't occur, well, you don't name the schools you did your research at.
That's true, I do not.
So we don't know if it was OU or where you were.
That's right.
You related a scene in the bar district of one college town in the first chapter of the book. You said it felt like the night of the living dead, and it sort of reminded me of the scene at the end of the night when I was a bartender, and besides the waitresses, the only sober person in the room.
Right.
Tell us about the night of the living dead.
Well, some of my field work, I would find myself out really late at night or early in the morning after the bars would close, and it was odd because, and sometimes I describe that world as drunk world. It's like another place. It's like visiting another place. If 80% of the people walking around are under the influence, a lot of people who are incoherent and a lot of people who are upset, people who are crying, people who are fighting, staggering. Most of the people out at 2 in the morning after the bars closed are under the influence. And it just, again, you feel like sort of an alien visiting another place and trying to capture all that stuff. I never felt like I was in danger. I never was, particularly worried about it. But, it was a unique situation. I did do some field interviews and documented. There's a lot of field notes in my book of the stuff that I saw. When I was out there in the middle of it and tried to document it as best as I could.
I kind of flipped through the book and read all the field notes. It was interesting. There is an age issue. When I was in college, 18 was legal. There was heavy drinking, yes, but there wasn't any, what I think of a lot that goes on a lot more now, hidden drinking. You hear about college students shooting beers and doing shots before they go out because they can't get into the bars.
Right.
Or if they can, they can't drink. They're identified as underage.
Right.
So how does that change the dynamic, or do you think it doesn't really? There was a lot of heavy drinking back in the olden days, but
right. No, I think you're right. I think not being able to get into bars means what contributes to the heavy pre-gaming. That's what they call it. So drinking in the dorm rooms or drinking in their house parties, wherever they live. But they're also, people of age are also pre-gaming pretty heavily too, before they go out. It's pretty typical for one of my respondents to say that they got a pretty serious buzz on before they went out to the bars. Part of that is because they feel like they're not going to be able to get served at the bars. The lines are too long, for example. Or they're going to a house party where the keg lines are too long. So there's lots of people reasons why people do the heavy pre-gaming. I don't know about the age so much. I'm not convinced that lowering And there's a whole vast body of literature on this. I'm not convinced that lowering the drinking age is going to make much of a difference. College drinking, it's so embedded in the culture. I just don't know that it would change it much.
Right, embedded in the culture, you talk about how it goes back to the beginning of time for college, that it and it was a status issue.
Right. Yeah, when I talk about some of the heavy drinking, there's a history of this, and I talk about the big three, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, and there was a lot of heavy drinking. And what was going on there was it was sort of conspicuous consumption. So that being a heavy drinker and not attending to your studies was sort of it was a suggestion to your audience that you had already made it. You were upper class and it already by birthright you were sort of elite and you didn't need to work hard at school because you were already there. So that sort of conspicuous consumption suggests that you don't have to be a hard worker. You just you're one of the elite already.
Tom, who's the target audience for this book? There is the bibliography and notes at the back, and which makes it look like at first blush an academic endeavor and not for everybody, but it doesn't read that way.
Well, that's I'm glad to hear that, because that was my intent, for it to have a broad audience. I hope that college alcohol scholars, sociologists will read it. I like to contribute to the debate on college drinking and what should be done about it. So I hope that policymakers and college administrators and researchers read it. But I also think college students will be interested in this. I've used the book in class and they've liked it. And, it's about them. And whether they drink or not, this is the culture, this is the world that they're living in. Parents, I think, should be interested in this because, it's a look at college drinking from the inside. And hopefully, it's a progressive sociological way of thinking about college drinking that most people haven't really heard about before. So, yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because that was the intent.
Where do drugs fit into the equation?
Well, not much. I got in trouble for this the other day because I was in an interview and I said, well, I don't know much about drugs. And someone got mad and said, well, alcohol is a drug. So let me say,
well,
first.
There's that, yeah. Of course. Yes. Yeah. But I guess I'm talking about illegal.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And but I just wanted to.
Yeah.
I did not get much on drugs in my data. I didn't ask directly about it. I didn't lead them about drugs. If drugs was part of their experience, then it made it into their drinking story. So marijuana came up, cocaine came up a couple times. Where does it fit in? The literature suggests that heavy drinkers are more likely to use other kinds of illicit drugs. And there's some suggestion, at least, anecdotally from some of the qualitative data, that there are people who claim that they only smoke marijuana or they only use other drugs when they're under the influence of alcohol. So there's that claim out there, and that's really an empirical question. But the thing is, most people aren't, there's not this hysteria, there's not this, all this media attention on drugs on campus. Really, most people, they're talking about heavy drinking and its consequences.
We're talking about drinking in college. They go like together, like, in some people's opinion, oil and water, and others, hand in hand. So it depends on where you're coming from. Coming up, we'll hear from a student and also the coordinator of the Alcohol and Other Drugs Wellness Program at the OSU Wellness Center. With me right now, Thomas Vanderven. He's author of a new book. It's called Why College Students Drink Too Much. Well, it's called Getting Wasted, Why College Students Drink Too Much and Party So Hard. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Weekday mornings, prepare for the day with NPR's Steve Inskeep and Renee Montaigne, and hear local news updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team. Listen to Morning Edition weekdays from 5 until 9 a.m. on 89.7 NPR News.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. 70 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Cloudy skies, becoming partly sunny today and a high near 90. Mostly cloudy tonight with showers and thunderstorms possible, a low of 69 degrees. Some sunshine for Thursday, a high of 81. And as we look ahead to Friday, sunny skies, a high of 82.
Support for 89.7 comes from Yoga on High, accepting applications for the Basic Yoga Teacher Training Program beginning September 17th. More details on becoming a certified teacher at yogaonhigh.com or 291-4444.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about drinking and college. Joining us now to talk about steps that the Ohio State University is taking to address the negative effects of binge drinking is Amanda Blake. Amanda works at the Ohio State Wellness Center, where she is the coordinator of the Alcohol and Other Drug Wellness Program. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thank you.
And still with us, Thomas Vanderven, author of Getting Wasted, Why College Students Drink Too Much and Party So Hard. He's a professor at Ohio University. First, I wanted to listen to a segment from This American Life. In this segment, host Ira Glass interviewed Penn State students for a story on college binge drinking in 2009. This is a clip from a couple he met at a party.
Did you know this guy before you came?
Look.
No, he's so weird. That's why I'm trying to get away from him. Wait, all the people I meet here are weird.
Really?
Him. He's really awkward. I don't know. He's kind of awkward.
I'm just trying to get her drunk so I can take advantage of her later.
That's awkward.
I know. I'm working on it.
So, that raises an issue that is another thing that goes hand in hand with college and drinking, which is sexual victimization issues. And Amanda, I was wondering in your line of work how much that comes into the discussion.
Definitely. You know, just hearing that, it makes me feel so sad. And I've heard students tell similar stories before where it's like, well, I drink so that I can have sex, or I drink, you know, for whatever reasons. But that's one of the messages we work to get out to students. That, you know, you've got to watch. One of our programs that we offer through the Student Wellness Center is called Sexual Violence Education and Support, which very specifically addresses that issue. But we try to get the message to students that, you know, you've got to watch, first of all, how much you're drinking. Second of all, you've got to keep track of your drink. A lot of times people will think, oh, you know, you've got to watch your drink to make sure it's not getting roofied or something like that. But alcohol is actually the most commonly used date rape drug.
Just plain old ordinary.
Just getting someone drunk to, you know, just like that student said, take advantage of them, or getting them drunk so that way it's almost like it's justified.
He was probably joking. It sounded like he was joking around.
Yeah.
But Tom Vanderven, did that come into play very often in your field studies?
Yeah. Well, you know, I would see when I was out there in the field, I would see a very intoxicated young woman, for example, being, you know, helped away by a male. And to me, and that's a pre-rape sign. You have a very intoxicated woman walking in another direction with a male. Now, it could be her boyfriend. It could be her friend. But that concerns me. And I would see, you know, and I talked to a lot of students about this. They're very aware of the risks for sexual victimization on campus. And Amanda just made some great points and suggestions about things that can be done. One of the things that I saw in the drinking scene is a lot of informal social support. So students in their groups that they hang around with when they drink, taking care of each other, escorting each other home, intervening when their intoxicated friend is talking to an unknown person. That's already happening in this drinking scene, this informal social support. And I think as universities, we need to facilitate that and encourage that and tell students to look out for each other and take care of one another. And it really, I think, can help to reduce this kind of behavior.
Tom, you write about the adventure of collective drinking. And I never really thought about it that way, but it is a social thing. It's a social experience for most kids. And there's you saw a lot of patterns. Tell us about the patterns you saw with them. What happens?
It's an adventure because, you know, so many of them do this to become less inhibited. So they say and do things that they wouldn't normally do. So you've got most of the people at a party or at a street festival in that kind of condition. That's an odd society of people with little inhibitions. And so they do and say things they wouldn't normally do. They say they're more loving and affectionate to each other in some ways. They will say and do things that they wouldn't, you know, tell each other how they feel about each other. They also will say mean and hurtful things that they wouldn't normally do. So it creates a lot of drama, a lot of upset people, and just an adventure. One of my respondents says, I love drinking. It's an adventure. Anything can happen. All is left to chance. So there's a lot of sickness. There's a lot of, you know, drunk sickness, people throwing up, and that helping each other through that. Vomiting is more of a public performance when people are under the influence than it normally is. For most of us, when we get sick, we prefer to be alone. You know, I don't need a bunch of people in there.
Talk about the night of the living dead.
Exactly. But in the drinking scene, it's more of a social public performance. So you have somebody who will throw up publicly and sort of be proud of it. Not necessarily proud of throwing up, but proud of overcoming it. And they call it puke and rally. So I just threw up and I'm going to go keep on drinking. That's what puke and rally is all about. So there's that. And there's just, you know, just as I said before, you know, upset people and a lot of public crying up and down the street that you wouldn't see normally during the day, fighting, and happiness and people singing and dancing to the, you know, in ways that they wouldn't before. They feel emboldened to do those things.
Amanda, in the work that you do, how much do you address the fact that so much of the drinking occurs collectively, like Tom was describing? And so when an individual comes to you, how do you deal with the fact that they're not out there doing it on their own? They're doing it with a big group.
We definitely address that in our programs. We talk with the students about, you know, when you're drinking, who are you typically drinking with? Do you typically get encouraged by your peers? One of our big programs that we work with is something called Social Norms Marketing. And the social norms theory suggests that students care more about what the norm is opposed to what's healthy. And so that's one of the things we work to debunk, sort of, is that, you know, not every student on a college campus is completely trashed all the time, or else how would anyone graduate? So we work to get the message out that, you know, not everyone's drinking all the time and that this isn't necessarily the norm for everyone. And getting back to the social support of supporting each other in positive ways. And, you know, if you are offered drinks and you really don't want them, what do you do in that situation? And giving them some practice with turning down drinks if that's not what they want, because that can be a really hard thing for someone to do.
If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you're a student, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about college and drinking. Sebastian in Westerville, you're an OSU student. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that that college drinking, I mean, you don't necessarily have to feed into that peer pressure at all. I mean, it is a societal norm in college to actually drink and get bent. I mean, I know what it feels like. I mean, I'm 23 years old, and I'm a transfer student from Rutgers, and I lived that party lifestyle before, and it just doesn't really apply to me. It's really boring, and I just really don't see any incentive in getting bent every other weekend, or just, like, you know, making a fool out of myself or falling all over the place.
Sebastian, do you think it made a difference when you transferred that you weren't with the old group that you were with when you started school?
Well, there was an alternate lifestyle out where I was. I mean, there was a big scene out there called Straight Edge, which I'm pretty much a part of and still a part of right now. And I really don't care very much to be around those kinds of people because, you know, like, first of all they, you know, if you go to a party, all they do is drink. And, you know, I can't communicate with a drunk like I can with a sober person. And it's just, you know, for some reason, I just find it really boring, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's kind of monotonous to, you know, feed into that routine every other week, you know.
Tom Vanderven, did you come across very many folks like Sebastian? And, Sebastian, thanks for your call.
Well, first of all, yeah, that was good. I do talk about straight edge a little bit in the book. I didn't have direct contact with that group, but that is an alternative. I met lots of abstainers. It's an important point. Not everybody drinks heavily in college. In fact, the number of abstainers, those who don't drink at all, has grown significantly in the last 5 to 10 years. So, yeah, there's lots of abstainers, and there are minor to moderate drinkers, too. There are people who drink and don't get completely hammered all the time. So that's one of the messages that I talk about in the front end of my book also, that Amanda talked about it, too. Not everybody is getting hammered all the time. There's some responsible drinking, however you define responsible drinking.
Which, and by the way, once again, Sebastian, thanks for that call. We really appreciate it. It makes me think about another issue. We spend more time teaching kids how to drive cars than we do teaching them how to drink. And all of a sudden, at the age of 21, okay, you can drink now. Ostensibly, I mean, obviously, most of them are drinking before the age of 21, but there's no training. What is responsible drinking? Amanda, does that discussion come up? Well, what do you mean by responsible? What is it?
Definitely. And through our educational programs, it's exactly what we're addressing. We meet with a lot of first-year students, all first-year athletes, a lot of Greek life students, and just students in general across the campus. And through our educational programs, we teach them, how do you find the balance if you're going to make the decision to drink? What would be a definition? If you remember the drink responsibly commercials that we would always see, well, what does that actually mean to someone? And then we'd have discussions around that. And also finding the balance of, all right, well, at what point is it too much? So just getting them to really think through for themselves, if they are a student who's drinking, how many beers is going to put you over that limit where it's just really too much for you? And at what point do you need to cut yourself off? And we talk a lot about setting limits as well. You mentioned we teach 16-year-olds how to drive, but we don't really teach anyone how to drink. And that's really an important concept to look at. Like, if you're suddenly 21 or 18 at college and suddenly you've got this unlimited amount of alcohol, how do you know what your limit is and when you need to cut yourself off?
Tom, what about that? In our society, drinking's illegal. It's pervasive, and yet we assume people just know how to drink. Suddenly 21 is some kind of magical number, and any sociologist or psychologist knows that 21 is still a child.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think of most college students are adolescents in the sense that they don't have really important roles in social institutions. I mean, they don't have careers, they don't have families of their own and all that. They're relative free agents in some ways. But, I mean, as far as the learning part, a lot of my respondents talked about learning to be a good drinker. So I think you're onto something there. And how do they learn? Some of it is just sort of, just trying it out and seeing what works. A lot of it they learn from their cohorts. But like Alcohol EDU, which is a program we use at Ohio University here to educate our first-year students, there are very simple things that people should know about drinking. Amanda talked about knowing how much is in your drink, monitoring your intake, eating before and during drinking is a good idea. Mixing in water with your drinking, so having a water for every alcoholic drink you have, knowing what your limits are. My respondents talk about doing a buzz check, which is sort of monitoring. It's an internal conversation you have with yourself as a drinker. How drunk am I right now? Do I really need more? There are things that drinkers can learn or college students can learn about how to be safer drinkers.
I want to listen to another cut from This American Life. It seems as though students consider college as the right time to drink when they're in their early 20s, and it's socially acceptable. Here's a clip from an interview that was conducted at Penn State, another one.
Whose birthday is it?
It's my birthday, my 21st birthday.
And happy birthday.
Thank you.
And what are you doing on the fourth floor of a parking garage?
I'm getting drunk and tailgating.
Describe your headgear there.
It's a crown with a 21 that's on fire, and it says, "Where's the bar?"
So who brought all this food?
My mom and dad, because they love me, and they're the best.
Which raises another question about learning how to drink. The parental involvement, there is a tacit approval still or not? Is that changing? Tom?
I don't know that it's changing. There is a tacit approval, and there's some evidence that parents of college students are coming to visit them on campus and partying alongside of them and getting involved in binge drinking as well. That happens. You know, this 21st birthday thing worries me too. You know, I've got a lot of stories about students who feel like that, you know, they are operating under sort of a cultural mandate to get extremely intoxicated on their 21st birthday. Their friends want mm-hmm. them to get extremely intoxicated, and they buy into that. That does worry me.
I think, I don't know if I read it in your book or I read it in some article in preparing for the interview about a guy that was drinking on his 21st birthday, and he was trying to do a shot for every year, and of course he died after 16 shots.
Yep, I've heard that a few times.
Amanda, what about the parental involvement function in this equation? Once they're at college, mom and dad are gone.
Yeah, and especially we tend to notice, especially with first-year students, you notice fall quarter freshman year is when students tend to report to me as their heaviest drinking. Not necessarily for everyone, but it seems to be a pattern that fall quarter freshman year here at OSU tends to be the highest, mostly because it's the first time they've experienced the freedom, first time they've got pretty easy access to alcohol. And we tend to notice the drinking kind of slope down from there. Again, not necessarily true for everyone, but it tends to be a pattern. As far as parents, again, going back to our programming that we offer, we try to get messages out, especially with first-year parents, of how to talk to your college freshman about drinking, you know, how to get the conversation started. But at the same time, if you have parents that are, you know, purchasing or providing the alcohol, it does make it a little more difficult because they might have a little different opinion of what the student should be experiencing. And then also, unintentionally, parents may be sharing their college glory days of, you know, I had so much fun, you know, and the alcohol and everything else that they might have experienced, which while they may not be intending for their student to go out and get completely trashed every night, they might be kind of giving that message to them that, you know, I did this, so it might be okay for you to do the same thing.
Yeah, you have to wonder who bought her the crown in the first place. You know, it made me wonder. Tyler in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. You guys are basically talking about it now, so my question has turned into a comment.
Okay.
You know, I experienced the same thing that they're saying where, like, you know, as I was in high school and growing up, like as I started driving, my mom started, you know, letting the leash go just a little bit and a little bit more and a little bit more. And, you know, then once I turned 18, we sat down and had the conversation of, you know, now your actions are, you're responsible for your actions. So then as I went to college, I mean, don't get me wrong, I did the binge drinking and not remembering walking home from the bar and things like that. But, you know, I feel that the kids that are sheltered more in high school, you know, it seems like they binge drink longer. Like I kind of had a honeymoon period with it, like, okay, yeah, I did it and now I'm done with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that just kind of moved into that, you know, quote unquote responsible drinking for me. It's like, you know, I know what is not enough and what is, you know, too much. And, you know, it's just, you find that happy medium as you grow up. And I feel that, you know, because my mom was the way that she was, that I'm able to find that balance.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Tyler.
No problem.
We're talking about drinking and college. They go hand in hand for many students. What do you think? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I want to thank Amanda Blake, coordinator of the Alcohol and Other Drugs Wellness Program at the OSU Wellness Center, for joining us. Amanda, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we'll be hearing from a former OSU resident assistant. And also with us, Tom Vandervin will stay. He's the author of Getting Wasted, Why College Students Drink Too Much and Party So Hard. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, the new Apostolic Reformation, a movement with growing political influence. Two of the apostles were organizers of Rick Perry's recent prayer rally. Their mission is to take dominion over government, business, and culture in preparation for the end times. We'll talk with Rachel Tabachnik, who researches the impact of the religious right on politics. Join us.
A
and Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. Join us tomorrow morning at 11 when some actors from the musical Jersey Boys will be in the studio, and we'll discuss that show now being staged in Columbus. That's tomorrow at 11 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories on 89.7 come from the Ohio Education Association, representing 131,000 teachers, support professionals, and higher educational faculty who are working for great public schools for every child. Online at ohea.org.
Tonight on WOSU-TV, a group of maverick mathematicians decipher the rules that govern fractal geometry. Watch NOVA, Hunting the Hidden Dimension, tonight at 9 on WOSU-TV. Cloudy skies today with some sunshine and a high near 90. Clouds tonight with a chance of rain and a low of 69 degrees. Sunshine tomorrow and a high of 81. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about drinking on college campuses. Still with us, Professor Thomas Vandervin of Ohio University. He's the author of Getting Wasted, Why College Students Drink Too Much and Party So Hard. Once again, Tom, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Ann.
And joining us now is Kiki Williams. She was a resident advisor at Ohio State for about four quarters, all of which was served in Baker West. She was also an office assistant for one quarter in Baker East. Kiki was a dance major, and she just graduated in June. She's from Altadena, California. Congratulations on graduation, Kiki, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
If you have a question or comment, you want to talk about college and drinking, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page if you want, and you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Harold. He says, binge drinking was the norm when I joined the college fraternity scene in 1963, and I'll bet it went back for generations before me. While we remain puritanical about underage drinking, we invite binging when youth are first released from prohibition. It's a rite of passage in the U.S., nothing at all new. And he kind of sums up a lot of the things we've been talking about up until now. We have an email from Bob. He says, back in the mid-1990s, I was a visiting professor at Public University in New England. The school year started off with an announcement that the university had been named the number one party school. Unabashed, I did what I could. I announced to every class I taught that I was launching a personal crusade to ruin their reputation by grading hard. I don't know how my one-person crusade worked, as I had moved to a different school the next year. But, Tom, that brings up the issue about what universities, what administrators, what professors and everybody are doing to deal with this problem. And is there much going on?
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on. Prevention programming and education programming relating to college drinking has increased dramatically over recent years. But it hasn't changed the levels of risky drinking very much. And binge drinking is right around 45% of college students and has been since the early 90s. So this programming hasn't made much of a dent in that. What has been done? All kinds of programming. I think Amanda was talking about social norming programs. Education, like Alcohol EDU, is done. Some universities have gotten more punitive with zero tolerance policies and expelling students for violating drinking policies. Some of the positive things, they have substance-free housing at many universities. I think one of the things they need to do and are doing is address the fact that not everybody drinks, and there's some students who don't drink who are negatively affected by the heavy drinkers, who make it harder to be a serious student, who are loud and vandalize things and make it difficult to be a non-drinker and serious student. So substance-free dorms is one way to deal with that population. But yeah, a lot of different efforts are being made.
Kiki Williams, as a resident advisor, did you advise much when it came to drinking?
Yeah, you know, a lot of what we do is to get directly involved in the students' lives and to hopefully through that become somewhat of a positive influence and, educate them and provide them with opportunities to do things other than go out and binge drink and, you know, party hard and things like that. So a lot of what we do is, like, creating activities in the dorms, Sometimes we do little mini field trips to, I don't know, Cedar Point. My dorm in particular, we went on trips to New York as like an arts trip because we are the arts dorm and things like that. And so we really try to provide opportunities and things for them to see that you can do other things while you're in college than just go out and party and drink. It still happens, of course, but, you know, we did our best and we tried to distract them, so to speak, from that.
Given your the proximity with students that you had as a resident advisor, how well prepared were you by the university to deal with these kinds of issues?
I would say nothing prepares you the most, more so than being in it and experiencing it. But preliminary preparation, they definitely did. We have a whole entire, I think it's like 2 weeks of resident advisor training before all the students move in. And it's a time when you, along with all of your other coworkers, actually come together and you get to know each other, which inevitably helps because you end up working a lot as a team as opposed to an individual resident advisor. We take classes in like suicide prevention and, you know, like confrontation, miniature like counseling and things like that, so that they can prepare us the best that we can for these situations. But truly, when you're in it, that's when you get the best exercises.
614-292-8513, that's the number to call if you want to talk about college and drinking. And Nick in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You're a graduate of Ohio University.
Yep. I did my undergrad at Ohio University, and then I just finished my grad degree over at Miami, and both had a really, really toxic drinking environment. And my comment was one of your guests talked about alcohol EDU a few times, and you said that binge drinking still about 45%. Well, our experience, or at least my and my friend's experience with alcohol EDU, was that it was a pretty empty-handed gesture. It was just like a three-hour computer program that you just like went through and answered the questions. And I was just wondering why use this program as opposed to maybe an RA. Like, I agree that resident assistants do speak to the people who are living there a lot more effectively.
Yeah, Tom, a computer program doesn't seem like it would be very effective at all with students.
Yeah, well, alone, if that was the only thing we did, I agree. But I think, you know, in if you link that up with other kinds of things, having educated, socially skilled resident advisors talking to students, having bystander intervention programs in place, which is, you know, really what my data suggests, the bystander intervention is a really important way to deal with the dangers of college drinking. So all of these things together, I think, can help us to reduce risky drinking.
Thanks, Nick, a lot for that call. We have an email from Paul. He said, I had to work my way through engineering and business school at Ohio University, so spending money to get drunk and show up for work or class impaired or hungover was not an option. I could afford to nurse a beer in a quiet towny tavern while I did my homework, but I really had no desire to binge. Are people in particular majors more likely than others to binge? For example, are philosophy or music majors more or less likely than engineering or education majors to binge? And what about the cost of all this drinking? How do students afford this in this economy? Two good questions. Let's go with the issue of, majors. Did you make any has anyone made any distinctions along those lines, Tom Vandervan?
I did not. I would ask my interviewees about their major, but no, I can't answer that question. I don't know if there's a literature on which majors drink more. We know other things. We know that your typical high-risk drinker is male, involved in the Greek system, although people outside the Greek system drink a lot. We know that college athletes are more likely to be high-risk drinkers.
So we know those kinds of things. Major-wise, interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. What was the other part?
They wondered how students afford this in this economy. And I remember I worked my way through college, too, and I never had a lot of money. Of course, back then, you know, in the olden days, they had dime beer nights. I mean, they made it very easy for you to get drunk. And, you know, you could get into the bars when you were a freshman. So
right.
It was a little different situation, but...
It's the same thing now, and this is one of the things that different drinking scholars argue, that part of the problem is that we have these drink specials. It's very cheap in most college towns to get intoxicated. Like you said, dime beer night or quarter beer night or quad night. Some of the risky drinking is facilitated by these specials where you have a lot, you can get a lot of drinks for not much money. The other thing they're doing is charging it, is getting credit cards, and they end their college experience with this incredible debt. We have a sociologist here at Ohio University, Deborah Thorne, who studies debt issues, and she talks about, you know, the problems with college students taking on credit cards and just, you know, jacking up their debts. And a lot of that debt, it comes from drinking.
Kiki Williams, when you were a resident advisor at Ohio State, when you were faced with a drunk student, someone on your hall, or
mm-hmm.
what would, and it was out of hand. I mean, everyone, you know, tipsy is one thing, mm-hmm. falling down drunk is another. How would you handle that?
To be honest, it was really, really stressful because the situation can go a lot of different ways. I've had experiences where the person who was drunk was just incredibly emotional and talkative. I've also had it where they were kind of violent, in which case we were advised to, as quickly as possible, call for help. We have, you know, building managers and other people who, you know, are higher above us in ranks who we can call. Mine was Mary Butler Stone. She was our resident manager, and we could call her at any hour of the day to come help us. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, though, when it was just us on our own and the situation was, we were able to handle it. It was about getting that person calm. It was about getting them water, getting them to sleep. First and foremost, you really want to be conscious of how drunk they are, what the state of their health is at that time, you know, if they're vomiting, if they're blacking out, if they remember things like their name or their birthday.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to assess the situation, because if it is at a point where you need to call 911, then we had to be aware of that, and we had to do that as quickly as possible so that we could keep the students' safety, you know, our number one priority.
Irene, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hello. I would like to make a comment to Kiki. She just said that it was very difficult sometimes to have control over drunk students who were maybe belligerent. Well, I had an incident with my son. My daughter graduated from Ohio State, and my son was there for almost 2 years. He was in a dorm, and he had a part-time job in the evening. In the meantime, his roommates, who were underage, were consistently getting drunk. And one, they were taking, you know, stealing stuff from his chest. But then one day, he came back. Where's my bike? They had thrown his bicycle off the 7th floor. And just before that, I saw a newspaper, Ohio State newspaper, that was a student paper, and they were showing how students would sit around on the grass underneath the windows just to take fresh air and study. Well, one of them could have been killed had this incident, you know, during this incident.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst part is it didn't seem like anyone had any repercussions on the students who did that. They were not censured. They were not expelled.
How long ago was this, Irene?
Well, this was some time ago, maybe 12, 15 years ago.
A lot has changed, right? Thank you, Irene, for that call. A lot has changed, right, Tom?
Yeah, I would say so. Well, you know, I mean, there's still people that behave like
that. Well, I mean, as far as the repercussions, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would say universities have gotten more punitive, and with students who violate, you know, just drinking policies, much less throwing a bike off a balcony. And, you know, the evidence suggests that college students want the university to crack down on that kind of behavior.
They want to go to a school that is it's a safe place. They want a high quality of life. They don't want to deal with people like that either. So students, at least from Henry Wexler's research, suggest that students want universities to take charge of this too now.
Shirley and Canal Winchester, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. I just wanted to say that my grandson started drinking when he was at the University of South Carolina. And then he moved up to Ohio State. His parents live in Georgia, so they gave him credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's used credit cards for drinking, and he drinks alone in his apartment. He has a personality that's for a person that should have never taken a drink at all.
Mm-hmm.
And now he is complete alcoholic.
Is there any sense about any thoughts about that?
Well, there are alcohol-dependent people throughout the social structure, so certainly there are people who are dependent on alcohol in college. The latest research I've seen on that puts the number at about 6%. 6% of college students are alcohol-dependent. Go ahead.
Is that the case for the general population too? Or?
It would be higher, okay. a bit higher than that. But there are a lot of high risk drinkers and people who abuse alcohol in college, but that's not the same as being alcohol dependent. And then we do know that people who abuse alcohol in college are at a greater risk for developing problems with alcohol later. That doesn't mean heavy drinkers in college will become alcoholics. It just means it might raise the probability.
Thank you very much, Shirley, for that call. Kiki, when you see somebody turning from maybe a binge drinker issue or getting drunk too much to maybe get something a little more serious, what is your role? Do you have one? Or?
To be honest, I honestly, we are resident advisors, and so our quote-unquote authority or responsibilities are limited.
Right.
And so if it is the case that someone is, possibly becoming an alcoholic, I have to admit that that's beyond personally what I can handle. And it could be something where they need attention that is more than what I can give.
Can you make recommendations, though, to them? Can you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we can make recommendations to them. We can talk to them about, if we're worried about them, letting them know that we're there to help. We can also recommend that they talk to, our resident manager who can get them the help that they need. We've gone with students before also to counseling and stuff over at the Student Wellness Center. Those are different things that we've done and can do.
Well, Kiki Williams, I want to thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Kiki was a resident advisor at Ohio State University for about 4 quarters. She was a dance major, and she just graduated in June. Want to thank Thomas Vanderven. Tom, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Tom is a professor at Ohio University down in Athens. He's the author of a new book. It's called Getting Wasted, Why College Students Drink Too Much and Party So Hard. I want to thank you for listening, and I also want to thank the Allside staff for helping out this week. Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Student Production Assistant and WOSU Radio Intern Leticia Wiggins, Associate Producer Amy Jurevich, and Producer Linda Taylor. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thank you so much for listening today. This is Allsides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 and WOSU 820 Columbus and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.